Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Wednesday, October 9th. I'm Ray Graff. Joining us this afternoon is physical therapist Matthew Goodemote. Matthew owns a practice in Saratoga Springs, also Clifton Park in Albany. He is here in the studio to answer your questions about orthopedics and sports medicine. If you have an injured or aching knee, elbow, shoulder, back, whatever, give us a call, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can also reach out to us via email at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. Physical therapy, Matthew Goodemote, your calls coming up on Vox Pop right after the news. Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Joining us to talk physical therapy today is Matthew Goodemote. Matthew is the owner of Goodemote Physical Therapy in Saratoga Springs. 20 years of experience, including exercise-based therapy and manual therapy. Matthew is one of just 350 specialists with his diploma from the McKenzie Spine Institute International. This year, Matthew founded PhysioFit Physical Therapy in Saratoga, Clifton Park, and Albany. It's a cash-based physical therapy practice specializing in prevention, continuing PT care after insurances no longer authorized visits, and progressing patients beyond normal daily activities. If you have an ache or a pain, or a question about your physical therapy regimen, give us a call, 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551 is the number. You can also email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. Matthew Goodemote, welcome back, sir.
Thank you very much.
You know, as I have grown older, winter gets less and has less and less appeal. The cold seems colder. Yesterday, Jean Gagnon was on. We talked travel, and she talked about holiday travel to warm destinations because winter is coming. And then the disquieting news before the show began that you're already starting ski therapy and prep for ski. This is terrible news, but tell us about it.
Okay, so the time to get ready for the ski season is quickly approaching us.
Yeah.
And the knee is the number one injury site for skiers. And so there's a lot of exercises, strengthening in particular, you can do to reduce your risks of injury while skiing and to prepare for the season that's coming up.
Like what?
Squat is the easy answer, so the basic chair squat. But with skiers, you got to get into some dynamic movements. So we would have people doing things with bands, and we have them doing things on things called BOSUs, which is that half ball for balance and whatnot.
Very interesting, though. When you ski, there is some lateral motion on the knee. How do you strengthen that particular aspect of the knee?
From the hips. So your hip muscles control what happens down below, specifically your glutes in that case. So we're trying to keep the glutes strong, your core strong, and then the thighs. Those are the primary muscle groups that we go after.
Once the ski season starts, you see a lot of people who come in saying, "Hey, I overdid it."
Yeah, the most common thing is people who don't do absolutely anything for the ski season ends in
which
April.
Which is most whatever, people, right?
And all the way until November, December, and they come back with sore, achy bodies and just kind of that, you know, muscle soreness, and it will last for a few days. And certainly as we get older, it tends to be a little bit worse, a little bit more stiff, and a little bit lasts a little bit longer.
Yeah, so, like getting out of bed at a certain age painful. Well, let's go right to the phones. 800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551. Taylor in East Chatham is first. Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Yeah, it's funny because I was just driving down the road. I was thinking, I got to do something about this pain. And then I heard you were coming on, so I thought, all right, turn up.
Perfect.
So what happened is I was riding. I hadn't ridden my bike for a while because the weather had not been great, and I went on this long bike ride, and I didn't have my bike shoes, but I have pedals that, you know, if you don't have to have the shoes, you can just use shoes, but I hadn't done that for long. Anyways, long story short, it was about probably a 20-mile ride up some hills, and my foot kept slipping off.
Yeah.
And in the end, I came off of it, no problem, but the next day I got up and my right hamstring into my like whole glute area is just has been painful, and it's been like that now for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And nothing I do, like, you know, foam rolling, like,
yeah,
nothing has relieved it. And I mean, I'm kind of desperate because it's keeping me from doing a lot of stuff. I mean, I'm still doing things, but it's painful.
Yeah. Okay. So that's the hamstring muscle, and the hamstring attaches deep in your butt area. So probably with the slipping off.
Right.
Yeah. So a sprain, strain type of thing usually is going to be a 7 to 10 day minimum before it starts to calm down if you did a good number. Did you have any type of bruising or anything like that you could tell?
No.
Okay.
No.
So the quick, easy solution to this is to keep it moving, keep it warm. So you want blood flow coming in there. There's a stretch that I teach people to do, and it's a hamstring stretch. And the way you would do it is lying on your back, and you would hug your thigh to your chest. And when I say that, people always grab their shin. So not your shin, but your thigh. Hug it right to your chest, and then keeping the thigh against your chest, try to straighten the leg out as far as you're able. Do not try to force it. And you'll feel a pull in the hamstring muscle. And then you do that same movement, but turn your toe inward, and you'll feel it pull differently in your hamstring, and then turn it outward, and you'll feel it pull differently. So the hamstring attaches all the way up to the butt area, and one of the more common mistakes people make when they're trying to mobilize that tissue is they don't address it at the butt area. And one quick, easy way to do it is how I described.
Okay.
And then part two would be to start strengthening it, but doing a thing called isometrics, which are basically you contract the muscle, but you don't let the leg go through any movement. And the quick, easy way to do that is lying on your back and doing a bridge where you lift your butt up in the area and just slowly start to walk your feet away until you feel the hamstring working, and then just hold in that position for a little while. And that's a good starting point for you.
Okay, excellent. Yeah, those are both good. Now, the first one, when you're I'm holding it to my knee up to my chest,
yep.
I'm actually resisting. I mean, I could obviously put it down easily, but I'm pretending like I can't.
No, you're trying to be as relaxed as you can, and you're holding it against your chest. And then when you try to straighten your leg out, you'll feel the muscle, the hamstring, get pulled. And then you don't have to even hold it for a stretch because you don't need flexibility at this point. You need mobility. So you want to get the tissue moving again, and you want to get it active again. And then again, lots of blood flow.
All right, Taylor, thanks for the call. 800-348-2551, the number. Matthew Goodemote is our guest. Physical therapy on the program today. Claude in Amherst. Claude, you're on.
Hi, I was playing a game called Zip Chip. It's sort of a frisbee-like game, and I wasn't very good at it, so I had to bend down to pick it up very frequently.
Yeah.
And my back was hurting at that time, and it's been 6 weeks, and it still hurts.
Yeah.
But it hurts now all over the place.
It hurts all over the place?
Only bending. I can,
okay.
I can bend, I can sit, I can walk, and that's no problem, but transitioning to bend between sitting and walking is what hurts.
Okay. So the quick, easy thing to start with, I keep saying quick, easy. It's not quick or easy.
No.
Don't
maybe
know
for
why
you.
It's coming out of there. So basically, you would want to start getting your back to go in the exact opposite direction of what you did to irritate it. So if you did bending forward, you irritated your back, then you would want to start bending backwards. And what you would do is just spread your feet apart, put the hands in the small of your back, and start doing some backwards motions. Those transitions, that's basically what happens. Something in the joint isn't happy right now, and that's why the transitions from a sit to stand are bothering you. And so doing that movement, like literally every time you stood up, doing a couple backwards bends, will start to ease some of that pain. And then there's times where you would need some manual therapy from a physical therapist or massage therapist because your muscles still may be a little agitated from what you did. And that would be quick in the sense you'd feel better afterwards. So
I did get
cortisone.
Two cortisone shots.
Yep.
He put it generally into the muscle to spread around to just reduce the...
Yeah, with a cortisone shot, it's usually for an inflammation, And if based on how you're describing it, I don't think inflammation is the issue anymore, because inflammation would be there all the time. Mm. So it would be there even when you were sitting, for example. And so the fact that it's during transitions, that would suggest that it's probably coming from a joint. And the joint just got a little irritated, but if you don't address it directly, it'll stay irritated for 6 to 8 weeks and sometimes even a little bit longer.
Okay. But if he sits around for 6 to 8 weeks, it'll go away on its own?
No. Movement is the key. Sitting still is not helpful.
All right. Nick in Cummington. Nick, you're on.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I've had a injury kind of ongoing in my lower abdominal area for about 10 or 11 months. Initially, it was thought to be a strain.
Yeah.
It was kind of sore for maybe 3 to 4 weeks. I didn't feel anything when the injury actually occurred. I had kind of a physical manual labor job. But basically, initially, it was thought to be a strain of some kind. And then after that was kind of thought to be a Spengelian hernia, and has now gone back after seeing a couple of hernia specialists to being thought to be like a rectus or transversus or possibly an inner oblique strain.
Yep.
Just wasn't sure, I guess. I've been going through physical therapy. I wasn't sure, I guess, what your thoughts were in terms of approach as to what is best to kind of get this healed and back to, I guess, regular life.
Sure. So the pain, are you still having pain?
Yeah, if I treat it carefully and don't really exert myself at work, which I've been trying to do, you know, most of the time, then I usually don't kind of aggravate it. But it can be aggravated. Something as simple as putting like a sock on in the morning, that stabilization of kind of bending over and pulling the sock onto my foot is something that will kind of cause it to twinge.
Yeah. And when you have that kind of pain, does it last ever, or is it just during that particular movement?
It's typically kind of maybe like a sharp pain initially, and then it kind of maybe lingers as like a dull irritation for a little while.
What's a little while? 5 minutes, 10 minutes, hour?
Yeah, probably 10 minutes. Okay. You might feel it maybe a little bit longer, but it kind of dissipates after a little while.
Okay, so the number one thing to know is that when you're trying to rehab something that's been taking this long and you're having pain during movements, that's not the red flag. Mm-hmm. It's the pain that lasts. So when you have pain that lingers on for 5-10 minutes, it's annoying, but it's not dangerous. So I would be doing things like I would absolutely have manual therapy going on to work on those abdominal muscles. It could also be a muscle that's underneath them all called your psoas that goes in through the pelvis and attaches on the back. And that could be when you're lifting your foot up, for example, to put the sock on. That could be contributing to it. And there's a muscle right on the rim of the pelvis that joins the psoas called the iliacus. And that could also be contributing to it. So you'd want to have a physical therapist manually palpating to see if you can identify where those symptoms specifically are. And also because manual therapy brings blood flow to areas, so that can be helpful. And as far as exercises, you can start off with just the basic isometrics, would be like planks, side planks, things like that, to engage the abdominals, but not taking them through a full range of motion, and then gradually starting adding the range to it. But at 10 months out, it should be safe to start doing more and more with. So don't be afraid of the pain during the movement. Be more concerned if it lingers. That would be more of a concern.
Thank you for the call. We have to take a break here. 800-348-2551 is the number. Matthew Goodemote is our guest. It's physical therapy today, and we will be back. Vox Pop on WAMC, 800-348-2551. Don't forget the lockbox is open at WAMC.org. We're trying to hit the halfway point in our fund drive of $500,000. If we can hit $500,000 before the fund drive begins, it will be a short on-air drive. And that, by the way, the on-air drive comes on Monday the 21st. So it's coming soon. On Vox Pop today, we are welcoming Matthew Goodemote. And we talk physical therapy every so often on this program. And this email came in from Chris. Chris says, could Matt talk about PTT, posterior tibial tendon tears and strains? I have an accessory navicular bone and PTT. Mm. I would like to know what he thinks about this, specifically what brace he prefers, orthotics. He doesn't like orthotics. Orthotics, casting, strengthening, without re-injuring or irritating the tendon. I'm working on non-weight-bearing exercises, but how far should I push it? A cast was not recommended.
Yeah, I'm not a huge fan of inserts and or cast. However, there is a time and place for everything.
Right.
And if this gets too bad, sometimes you do have to immobilize it to give it a break and then start to rehab it. But he's non-weight bearing right now. So the posterior tibialis is a muscle that attaches in the back of your shin bone, goes down the inner part of your ankle,
yeah.
and then inserts right in the arch of the foot on that bone, the navicular bone, which is in the arch of the foot. So there are times where he may need some insert temporarily to get over the hump.
Well, and talk about getting over the hump. Now,
okay.
the rest of this is no cast recommended, just yep. PT, orthotics, ice, rest, and, of course, surgery.
Yeah.
I'm trying to avoid the surgery. I'm on my yep. feet all day, so I'm off work for a few days to get swelling and pain reduced.
Ah.
I bought a C2 ankle boot for okay. icing. And that is the end of Chris's email.
Okay, so the icing part is fine for pain control, but if you're trying to help muscles heal, they need blood flow. And so I would be going with, actually, instead of heat or ice, I could go with compression.
Ah.
So a compression sock would get rid of swelling much better than ice would, and mm-hmm. Elevation would as well. So I would definitely get a pair of compression socks, and if not compression socks, the PT should have some compression wrap to put on the foot to help support that. And that could be the thing that starts to diminish the pain.
Okay.
And then strength-wise, if he's non-weight-bearing for the next couple of days, it's just active range of motion type of things, and then gradually starting to do weight-bearing. And that particular muscle, you'd be doing things like single-leg standing, which is just balancing on one foot, and the instability of balancing on one foot makes those muscles work. And that's kind of where I'd start. And depending on how bad it was to palpation, I would be doing a lot of manual therapy around the calf muscle where the muscle inserts.
Okay.
And then gradually starting to do some more strengthening things. But if it's a real agitated tendon, it's going to take a little bit of time to calm it down.
How little?
It's going to take a couple weeks. And especially if he's on his feet all day, then he's using it all the time.
Mm.
That's where the braces and support can come in, because then he can do it while he's working so it doesn't agitate. But as okay. soon as you get done working, get it off and start working on the muscle. And eventually he's going to have to do some calf raise type of movements and just strengthen the whole lower foot, lower
All
leg and
right.
foot area.
Well, thank you for that email, Chris. Matthew Goodemote is our guest. And back to the phones we go at 800-348-2551. Joanne in beautiful Marcy, New York. Joanne, you're on.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have some questions about plantar fasciitis, which I'm sure...
Yes.
I've heard so many people have this. 2 years ago, I had it treated. I had cortisone shots, but it took quite a while to get rid of it.
Yeah.
It has come back again, and I've had 15 laser treatments on my foot.
Yes.
It's sort of subsided, but I hear all kinds of things like you should wear special shoes, you should ice it, you shouldn't ice it. I just right. want to know how to prevent it, how to treat it.
Okay. So the... passive treatment, which would be a laser treatment, is only in the acute phases, and then you'd want to go to active treatment. And then preventatively, it'd be the similar things that you would be doing to treat it while it's active to make it so it doesn't come back. And one big area would be to keep the muscles of the calf mobile and loose. It's rare for someone to have a plantar fasciitis without having something going on with their Achilles or that posterior tibialis that we were just talking about in the last email. And
okay.
so you would want to do things like foam rolling, or if you have go to a massage therapist or anything like that, having them work on those calf muscles. And then you want to make
okay.
sure the foot itself is strong. And so oftentimes you'll use an insert to get over a plantar fasciitis. But when the plantar fasciitis calms down, I'm a fan of getting out of that to start build the strength back up in the foot. And the proper shoes
okay.
would be the shoes that feel the best. And it, I don't like a lot of support in shoes for everyday things, meaning don't do it all the time every day. So if you're around your house, getting out of shoes completely, walking around barefooted is good. But even when you go out, have different style of shoes so you're not wearing the exact same type of shoe over and over again. And then as
okay.
with the last caller, you have to build the strength up in the foot and the strength up in the calf. And we do a lot of manual therapy at our office. So we would make sure the muscles of the calf are nice and loose and limber. And we would even be working similar to what they're doing with the laser treatments and stuff directly on the plantar fascia with the idea of bringing blood flow there. And again, there are times to get over a hump. You do need something in the shoe to give it a break. And then once it starts to calm down, to wean yourself out of it so the muscles of the foot don't get weaker.
Okay. You know, I have one concern. Somebody told me once not to use the treadmill. I've heard not to wear flip-flops.
Yeah.
And I like to walk. Yeah. And I would think that my calves and my feet would be strong because yeah. I try to walk every day.
Right. It's going to depend on your shoes, though, because if you have shoes that have a lot of support in them, then they're not allowing the foot to go through its natural range of motion. And the intrinsic, the muscles in the foot itself, they're called intrinsic muscles, they don't get used as much. The reason for no flip-flops is your toes have to grip to hold the flip-flop on your foot. And so you'll actually be using a muscle on the bottom of your foot. It's called the flexor hallucis brevis. And there's lots of people who've been diagnosed with plantar fasciitis that actually have just a flexor digitorum brevis irritation.
Like a spasm.
Yeah, exactly. So again, the manual part of it, the plantar fasciitis is right at the heel. And if it's pain in the arch, it's that little muscle. And then you just do a simple release to it. And you mentioned ice or no ice. Ice is great for pain control. It's an analgesic.
Ices?
Mm-hmm.
I'll be darned.
But the plantar fasciitis, the current theory is that it's not always an inflammatory reaction. It's more of a fraying or a pathological type of tissue. And the way you get that improved isn't with ice. Ice is great, again, to numb it if it's really sore, but you need strength, you need mobility of the tissue, and you need a healthy foot.
All right, so. Joanne, hey, thanks for calling. We appreciate it very much. I made a mistake, and that's whoever I hung up on, please call back. It's my bad. You know, I didn't even know I hit the wrong button, Zach, the engineer. It didn't seem that way. Maybe it was a glitch in the system. Matthew Goodemote is our guest today. Andrea's in Beckett. Andrea, you're on.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure.
Doctor, I have a long history, 20 years or more, with avascular necrosis in my hips due to high-dose prednisone use for a bone marrow disease.
Yep.
And I had the left hip replaced 19 years ago. I dislocated it anteriorly 1 year later, and I've been fine for all these years, but for the last 2 or 3 months, I had a lot of pain in the left hip, the replaced hip, when I walk. I thought perhaps it was sciatica, and I've been waiting for it to resolve.
Okay.
I just yesterday had x-rays of both hips, which showed normal.
Good.
So I'm curious about what to do.
Okay, so the hip joint is often, people often describe it when they have butt pain and pain that comes out to the side as their hip. In my profession, I call that back pain. So if you're having buttock pain or pain that radiates out to the side of the leg, that's going to be more back pain. Hip pain is going to be more in the groin area. And you mentioned sciatica. So what made you think sciatica?
Well, because the pain was just where you mentioned, sort of coming out of the back of the buttocks and around to the sides.
Okay.
And I've had sciatica before, but manifested a little differently.
Yeah. So sciatica is kind of a catch-all term, but the pain that comes out of the lower lumbar spine and starts in the back, radiates the side of the leg, and will go down below the knee. So if you haven't had pain below the knee, it's not technically a sciatica yet. It can just be back pain that's referred in that area. One of the easy ways to find out, I keep saying easy, Ray. I don't know what's going on.
Oh, really?
So, yeah. So what you would want to do is you want to check your motion. And the quick way to do this is you stand in a doorway and you slide your hips to the right and you slide your hips to the left. And if
so
you
it's like the hokey pokey.
Yes, but in the doorway.
Right.
And if you have pain on your left side when your hips go to the left, that would lead me more to just muscular issues, and I would want to do manual therapy around the back, buttock area, and possibly with those iliac psoas, which is inside the pelvis. But if you had pain on the left side when your hips went to the right, that would make it me think that it's coming from your lower back, and then I would show you specific stretches to alleviate that. So it's really going to depend on which direction you go in and where your symptoms are. But when you have pain in the buttock area, that is usually coming from the lower back. And it tends to respond in a short term to manual therapy, but you would need to do some specific movements to alleviate it for long term. And it's good news that your hip came back normal, so it means it's most likely not coming from there. It probably is coming from your back.
All right, Andrea, thanks so much for the call. Now, I believe Carl in East Greenbush, I hung up on you, Carl. You're back on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. So I got diagnosed about 6 months ago with a pinched nerve in my neck. And when the doctor did that, he noticed that he did an x-ray, and all my discs have flattened out. I'm over 60, so I guess that's expected.
Yeah.
the problem presented as numbness in my right or my left arm.
Yeah.
And I did some physical therapy, and then my time ran out, and the problem is really much better. I mean, but it's not gone completely.
Right.
And I don't know whether, you know, I'm worried about the long term, but thinking, can I more than just the exercises I was given by the physical therapist?
Sure. So the degenerative changes when our discs flatten out, that is a normal part of getting older. And it's not likely the source of the problem that caused the numbness. Now, when I say that, of course, it contributes because when you degenerate, it gives you less room and less space for that nerve root to run through. But it usually is coming from something else. And that something else is most often a disc. And it doesn't mean it's a bad one. It just was alerting you that it didn't like what was going on. Hence the response, you're getting better with therapy. So the main thing that I would have you doing is continuing the neck exercises that helped you and help the exercise or help the arm specifically. And I would not stop those until the symptoms are gone 100%. And even then, I would try to make it part of your daily routine, because what the spine joint in particular needs is movement. And at the neck, especially if you have, like most Americans, not the greatest posture, then your upper back is rounded forward and you're more susceptible to having problems with that kind of postural positioning. So I would encourage, you know, work on the posture and continuing range of motion, because the joints of the neck, well, the joints of the spine, period, get nutrition by you moving. So if you don't do exercise on a regular basis, you're more susceptible to having problems. And then the last thing is just general exercise. So cardiovascular is good because it releases good hormones in our brain that help to reduce pain levels. And then strengthening is good because we're finding more and more that people who do strengthening on a regular basis have fewer and fewer problems and more function. So
all right.
That's the general answer.
Interesting. You mentioned the nutrition.
Yes.
In the spine.
Yes.
You know, you see these ads on late night TV. Uh-huh. The old guy hangs upside down and rejuvenates the discs. Any truth to that?
So there's some things, like, for example, when we sleep at night, there's no gravity acting on us. And so when there's no gravity, the disc will rehydrate, so it fills up with fluid. Mm-hmm. So if you're interested in keeping your height when you're going to the doctor to see tall, get measurements in the morning, because by the end of the day, you've shrunk from gravity.
Well, I'll be darned.
But the nutrition from the disc is kind of like a sponge, where if you push on one part of it, all the fluid gets squished out. And when you release that part, all the fluid comes back in. So that kind of treatment is not what I'm speaking of. It's more that it's going to allow, similar to what sleep would allow, perhaps in a shorter amount of time than it would take for sleep. But if you're looking for a healthy disc joint, you need movement in all the ranges of the spine.
I knew you were going to say that, but I'm just asking you whether the inversion swing actually does anything.
It does things, yes, but exercise is definitely better than the inversion swing.
But I want to try it.
I'll let you know. Make sure you wear a helmet.
I should do the show with like that. Yeah. You know? That'd be very... Greg in Albany. Greg, you're on.
Hi, good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call. Always enjoy the show.
Thank you.
Listen, I've got pains in both of my thumbs at the lower part, where almost down to the wrist. Yeah. I attribute it to texting.
Yep.
You probably heard this before. I have one of those, an iPhone, right? So there's no real buttons. Ironically, I didn't have that when I had a BlackBerry with push buttons. So. Okay. I don't know. Have you heard of it, and any recommendations to alleviate it?
Yeah, so the new iPhone has an app that you can do a swipe on it, so you don't have to tap with your thumbs. But as far as what to do with the thumb specifically, that is the thumb joint. And it would be, you know, in the clinic we do manual therapy to do mobilizations and soft tissue work around the thumb. And because of the position that you're doing with texting, it would literally be going in the exact opposite direction. So I'm doing it in the studio right now, so you can't see me, but basically you grab your thumb and you grab it right at the base where it's bothering you, and you start to pull it up so it's going towards the back of your hand. So just go like imagine you're on the phone and you're tapping your thumbs, and just move your hand in literally the opposite direction and use your whole other hand to kind of massage it up in that way. And then I'll also do a distraction technique where I just pull on the thumb and wiggle it around a little bit. Sometimes the joint gets a little wonky from doing the same repetitive movement, so if you just move it around a little bit, it can give you some relief. Oh, and the last thing.
Well, thanks for the recommendation.
Yeah, forearms. So check your forearms. If you find that you have some soreness and tightness in the forearms, same thing, massage them or get to a PT or a massage therapist and have them work on them. That can make a big difference as well.
Gotcha. Right. Well, I really appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
You're
for
welcome.
Your recommendation.
Thanks for the call, Greg. Let's take a break. 800-348-2551. Matthew Goodemote is our guest today. It's physical therapy, and we will be right back. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff with you at 800-348-2551. We welcome Matthew Goodemote to the program today to answer your physical therapy questions. All right, a few emails here, and then we hit the lightning round.
All right.
And we'll try to blast through as many calls as we can.
Sounds good.
This email from Taylor. Taylor writes, could you please speak briefly about isometric exercises and their role in building strength and the effect on flexibility for work, skiing, general health, highly mobile person, and was recommended isometric exercise such as holding push-up position or 90-degree squat against a wall, and that is from Taylor.
Wow, I love that. So
maybe you recommended it.
Yeah, so isometrics are where you don't move the joint, so the muscle is contracting, but you're basically staying in one place. The concern there, so the plank position where you're in a push-up position and holding, it's making sure it's done properly. So a lot of times with fatigue, people will start to rest on their ligaments and they'll arch their back, yeah, or they'll drop their shoulder blades, in which case those loose joints that she has, it wouldn't be good for them.
All right.
I love the exercise against the wall sits, and I do those with my patients all the time. And I do a 30-second hold, by the way, for three sets of 30. And the reason for 30 seconds is when you look into the research past 30 seconds, there's not a whole lot of improvement in how much the muscle is getting activated. But up to 30 seconds, there's quite a bit of improvement. So three for 30 is what I recommend.
All right. This is from Diane. Diane is an active 58-year-old woman. She writes, 5 days a week, I do 5 miles on the elliptical, 2,500 meters on the tower, weight training, and walk 2 to 3 miles. Weekends, I walk 5 to 7 miles.
Yeah.
Busy lady. A personal trainer suggested squats, but after a few weeks, I stopped doing these as I felt pain in my knees. 2 months have passed since I did the squats. A few weeks ago, I started having pain in both knees that I could not attribute to a specific injury. No swelling. And she tried ibuprofen, cutting back to 15,000 steps per day versus over 20,000. Still having pain. What do you suggest?
Isometric squats.
Okay.
So the squat depends on how you're doing it. So if you were doing a squat and your knees were coming out over your toes while you were doing that, that puts more pressure on the knee joint, and that can make people's knees cranky. Most of my patients will know that when they say it bothers them to squat, then the first thing I recommend them doing is more squats. But the way to do that is by propping up some pillows or blankets in a chair so you can do the movement without bothering the knees, and you do repetitions to get stronger. And then I like blankets because you can unfold them and go down a little bit deeper. So as days and or a couple weeks go by, you'll gain strength and be able to go deeper into the movement until you can do a normal squat without the pain. I doubt walking had anything to do with the knee pain, so I don't think that was necessary to reduce it. And I think that doing walking would be helpful.
5 days a week, 5 miles on the elliptical, 2,500 meters on the tower, which I don't even know what that is.
Yeah.
2 to 3 mile walk, 5 to 7 miles on the weekends.
Yeah.
That's a lot busy. Of walking.
Yeah, there's some data out there about long-term walking, though, and how it's really beneficial.
Okay.
So the notion of it's possible that walking could irritate it, but the fact there was something that triggered the irritation,
yeah,
I would deal with that part of it and not so much. Now, it could be instead of going right back to, you know, the full amount of walking, it's more of a gradual increase. But it would be if there's no swelling and if there's not getting worse while walking, it would be unusual for it to be my main concern.
All right.
And I would encourage the squat, but modified.
Matthew Goodemote is our guest. It's physical therapy. Two more emails, and then to the phones we go. This is from Shane in Stone Ridge. Subject heading, shoulder impingement. I've got shoulder impingement and arthritis in my shoulder that was shown via MRI about 2 years ago. No visible rotator cuff tear. It's gotten progressively worse from where I would get about 6 weeks of reprieve from a cortisone shot to no relief out of my last one in July. I can barely get dressed or steer with that arm. But I'm a self-employed landscaper, so taking it easy is not an option. I'm looking at surgery over the winter. But in the meantime, is there any kind of prehab I can do leading up to that?
Okay.
And what's the rehab period?
Wow. So the rehab, prehab, definitely, because there's times where you can go to physical therapy and alleviate pain from impingement.
Yeah.
So there are times where people have an impingement where there's a bone called your acromion, and it can have a different shape to it. So there's some people who have this big hook, and the tendon that runs underneath it just keeps getting impinged.
Yeah.
So in those cases, oftentimes you do need surgery to resolve that. But if there's not some kind of structural problem, I would absolutely do therapy, because there's a lot of stuff you can do for the rotator cuff to get it strong, to help hold it in the proper position. You got to work on the thoracic spine, the shoulder blades, getting them strong. And sometimes it's just a shoulder blade, a coordination problem where the connection with how the rotator cuff and the shoulder blade are working together, there's a disconnect there. And that could be because he's a landscaper, a lot of forward movements.
Yeah.
He may not be doing enough for the muscles in the back. So.
All right. That sounds like a tough one. This one is from our buddy Rich, and this will be the last email. Any opinion on using KT tape to soothe joint sports injuries? What's KT tape?
KT tape is that tape you saw in the Olympian when she was the volleyball player on the beach, and she had the tape on her shoulder. That's a few Olympics.
I didn't see that episode.
The Summer Olympics.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Carrie Walsh or something like that.
Yeah, what happened? Yeah.
So the KT tape is, it can be helpful for people for pain control. And basically what I think is happening is a thing called proprioception, where the tape, you're able to feel the tape on there, so your brain is registering that there's something happening there, and it just pays closer attention to it without you having to think about it.
So you think it's psychological?
I do. Oh. I don't think, we know like tape on the outside. For example, if you have a joint problem and you're putting tape on your skin, it's not likely to have a huge impact on the joint itself. So people will say, well, it's supporting the muscle and things, but the data just doesn't back that up. And however, there are people who definitely respond to it, and I've used it myself, and I've used it with patients. So what I do is I tend to have that kind of open approach where it's okay to try it. I don't have any major expectations per se, but I've seen people who've really responded well to it, so I wouldn't discount it completely.
All right, back to the phone. Susan in Cambridge. Susan, you're on.
Thanks so much. I have two questions. I'll do the first because I think it's the quicker one. The second is more pressing. Have you ever heard of people getting results from doing physical therapy for neuropathy in your feet due to chemotherapy?
It's not often that you would get relief from it. I have that kind of approach. It wouldn't hurt. Sometimes doing some manual therapy, but you can do that with massage therapist as much as a physical therapist. And sometimes trying acupuncture, and you can get some relief with those type of things. But when it comes to the chemo, it can just injure the nerve so bad that it doesn't help. But it's okay to try it.
Thanks a lot. The second is I had a bad fall, and I had a compound fracture of my right wrist.
Yeah.
Apparently, I think it's the radial bone was quite smashed, and the ulnar, I guess, was sort of poking out through the skin. So the surgeon had to sort of put my bone back together.
Yeah.
Now I'm starting physical therapy. It feels very weird. My hand is not like it used to be.
Yeah.
I have quite a bit of numbness in the ring and pinky. I'm just wondering, just from your experience, how much do you think physical therapy can help me?
Oh.
And at what point do you think maybe I should go back and see for further surgery if they could do more to get more of the nerve function back?
Right. I would try therapy for quite a while after a bad fracture to try to get as much motion as you possibly can. And again, doing a lot of manual therapy for the soft tissue around it. And then regarding the nerve symptoms, if you're not having weakness where your motor part of the nerve is still functioning, sometimes the sensory part will start to get better as time goes on. And it unfortunately can take months for that to happen. So it's more that if you're seeing change where you could have like some days the numbness is bad and some days not as bad, that's a good sign. But if it's exactly the same, it doesn't change no matter what you do, that would be more of a concern to me, especially if it was like that for weeks and weeks, then I would want to talk to the doctor again and try to address it quickly. And it doesn't necessarily mean surgery. There's other things out there besides surgery. You know, sometimes it's a cortisone shot, sometimes PRP, which is platelet-rich plasma. There's other alternatives before going back into surgery, but sometimes you need it.
Susan, thanks for the call. And now we head over to line 8. Elaine in Hague, you're on.
Hi, thank you. I have another neuropathy question.
Yes.
I have a peripheral neuropathy that's affecting my feet
and my hands primarily.
Okay.
I hike and snowshoe and all those sorts of things. But I'm wondering if there's something I can do or can be done to relieve some of the, it's pain and it's tingly, it's pins and needles in my feet and hands to take care of that.
Well, there's sometimes where you can't do anything, meaning that you can try everything, but it's not going to change a whole heck of a lot. But it's worth trying. So I again, would have people doing things like manual therapy to see if you can work on the tissues around there and if that has any improvement. In the foot, there's times where we can use different modalities. And in that case, I would try everything that you could possibly try to see if you made any gains. But in the end, the most things that I found for people depends on where the neuropathy is coming from, too. So if we have a clear reason for it, like a diabetic neuropathy, once it starts to go in the wrong direction, it really is hard to reverse it. But you can do some things to try to maintain it. And one thing I've found is just staying active, keeping the blood flow in there the best you can. Doing things like in the hands with gloves and whatnot can help. It doesn't resolve it, though.
Yeah, this is an IgM monoclonal cause in the blood. So it doesn't keep me from being active, but at some points it's really annoying, tingly, painful kind of thing. So
I haven't had great success with neuropathies that come from those kind of things. So. But it's worth trying. It doesn't hurt to try.
Elaine, thanks for the call. Our number here, 800-348-2551. Matthew Goodemote is our guest. And Brenda in Pine Plains. Brenda.
Oh, hi. Thank you. I'm wondering what exercise I can do for a shoulder. I've always had trouble with it from the time I've been a kid. But now, the other day, well, actually some months ago, I lifted a suitcase over a puddle. You know, off to the side.
Yeah.
I did not in the back, but like off to the side. And it's been hurting ever since.
Okay.
I can't sleep on my side. I'm used to sleeping on my right side. I can't anymore. Yeah. Or I wake up with an awful lot of pain.
Yeah.
So I'm just wondering if there's anything, any kind of exercise I can do.
Yeah. Are you able to reach your arm overhead still?
Yes.
Okay. So you haven't lost any motion from since you've injured it?
No, I probably not. It's just a pain that's there, but I don't think there's any loss of motion.
Okay, so sometimes when you're holding something heavy off to the side like that and you're trying to lift it slightly out to the side, there's a specific rotator cuff muscle called your supraspinatus that helps to initiate that movement, and you may have injured that one. And so the safe exercises are, again, things called isometrics, where you're contracting the muscle, but you're not taking it through a range of motion. It'd be too hard to describe, but you could look it up online as isometrics for the rotator cuff, and I'm sure they'd have videos and things like that. And that's a good place to start, but maintain the motion. So as long as you're able to reach overhead and things like that, continue to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Not so much as an exercise, more as just to check and see that you can. And if you start to notice that it becomes harder to do it, it is worth getting evaluated because you may have injured the rotator cuff, and then you would want some specific guidance. Okay.
Right.
Okay.
Oh, well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Brenda. And of course, I think it goes without saying you shouldn't lift luggage over your head.
Yeah. So when she first said it, I thought she was going to say putting like into a overhead bin on an airplane. And I've had patients who've torn their rotator cuff doing something heavy like that. But that lift out to the side, that's the supraspinatus. And my guess is that she's injured that.
All right. So. Let's go now to Nancy in Rexford. Nancy, you're on.
Hi, I'm a 63-year-old woman who's very active, but I have a sister that's 10 years older than I am, and she has terrible adult onset scoliosis.
Uh-huh.
So when I went to my primary doctor, I asked her to look at my spine, and she said I do have a curvature.
Yep.
So I'm wondering if there's any kind of preventative therapy I can do. I don't have any pain now, but I certainly want to prevent any further problems.
Yes. The first thing you would want to, there's a few things, but the first thing is to be very conscientious of your posture. And it's very common for people to have some scoliosis or curvature in the back. And some of it comes from just being right-hand dominant or left-hand dominant, so we use our body differently. But the posture is the number one thing to start with, just being aware of how you're standing and how you're holding your body, even when you're sitting, that you're not leaning off to one side and kind of caving into the curve. And then you would want to do strengthening exercises, and specifically you would want to do exercises for your core, and that would be things for your abdominals as well as the muscles in the side and the muscles in the back. And you would want to be doing some kind of exercise where you're doing some form of lifting, and where you'd want guidance on technique and things like that. But oftentimes people who are active don't think to do lifting, and yet the muscles that you use to lift are the very ones that help to stabilize the spine. So I would get some guidance in that, and that would be a good way to go.
Nancy, thank you. And to New York City, and David, you're on.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I've been diagnosed with pitcher's or golfer's elbow.
Yes.
And it presents with a lot of pain and weakness.
Yep.
Other than waiting for about a year, which I've been told it might take that long to get better and maybe getting a shot.
Yeah.
Is there anything I can do in the meantime
to
alleviate the symptoms or even, you know, start to use it again?
Yeah, for sure. The first thing is to get some manual therapy done to the forearm muscles, because some of the discomfort you might be having may be coming just from the tension in the muscles due to the fact that there's an irritation on your bone. And there's also, I often use compression, and you can just get a basic compression sleeve to put over your elbow. And primarily what that's doing is blood flow. And then there's several strengthening exercises that you could do, starting with isometrics, progressing to eccentrics, and working the strength back in the, it's the medial epicondyle is what golfer's elbow is, so it's the opposite of tennis elbow. And yet there's a ton of things you can be doing, and absolutely before you have another shot or a shot, get to a physical therapist, because that's something we treat regularly with very, very good outcomes. So I would not wait. I would address it and get it better for sure.
That's great. I really appreciate it. Thanks very much.
You're welcome.
David, thank you. And now to Evie in Kingston. You're on.
Hi. Thank you very much. In my left hand, I had diagnosed an osteoarthritis.
Yes.
At the base of my thumb.
Yep.
And the basal joint.
Okay.
And I've been told to just go ahead and work through the pain and to just put back the pick brace at night. But what has not been explained to me, and I've tried to, I'm really humbled by the complexity of the hand and all the things going on in it. I can't figure it out, but I've got a lump in the heel of my hand, the underside, at the palm.
Yep.
And if I roll my hand over, I often have a lump there also.
Yeah.
And that one comes and goes. I don't understand the nature of that lump. I don't know if that's. I asked the doctor, and he said, "I said, what's that?" And he said, "Don't really know."
Yeah.
But you know, just go and use it. I have a fear that I've somehow ruptured that tendon.
Oh no.
Is that any possible?
No. So the lump that you're feeling, there's times where people get ganglionic cysts and they will just kind of come and go, and we don't really have great explanations all the time as to why that happens.
The doctor should know what that is.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And it's usually pretty easy to palpate and you can feel it there. A ruptured tendon, however, would be completely disabling. So you wouldn't be able to move with a ruptured tendon. If you had a partial tear, you would have pain, but you wouldn't necessarily feel any lump there. And there's times where it's just the arthritis that you're feeling some degenerative changes and some bone spurring type of things on the joint itself. And I would agree that using it is the solution, but there's things that you can do and get help with mobilizing the joint and keeping it loose and limber the best you can.
All right, Evie, you're the last one today. Thank you for the call. Thank you to Matthew Goodemote for being here. What's your website?
GoodemotePT.com and physiofitpt.com.
Well, thank you for being here. We'll see you soon. Support comes from Pelham Auto Service, Route 9 at the Amherst-Belchertown line at the sign of the Flying Pig. Worker-owned and operated service, repairing foreign cars since 1972, PelhamAuto.com. And John Keel Music, offering school band and orchestra rentals with school delivery to upstate New York and western New England, locally owned and operated since 1930, JohnKeelMusic.com. I don't think I ever rented an orchestra, but I guess you can do it. Thanks again to Matthew Goodemote for being here, and thank you for listening. Tremendous calls. Zach Malloy only irritated a few times during the show today, so we call that a win. Kayleen White answered the phones. Our producer, Jim Lavoulis. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, two team members of BST Accounting Tax Advisory will join us to discuss financial retirement planning. There is nothing more exciting than a show about accounting. I will be counting the minutes. We'll see you then.